Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey folks, Zach Osman here, IU Insider, Indianapolis Star. This is Mind Your Banners for Sunday night, October 1st, 2023. It is October. Baseball is turning the page to the postseason, and Indiana football is turning the page to a new offensive coordinator. That is what we call a transition or a segue. I'm not really sure. I should probably learn some of the technical details of podcasting if I'm going to do it this often. As always, with me on Sunday nights, Mike Nizelik. Mike, an ugly day at Maryland. I don't know that we necessarily expected Indiana to win that game, but you certainly were looking for more response. I think if you were an IU fan, I think if you were Tom Allen, then being down 21-3, Maryland had four offensive drives, I think, in the first quarter. One they punted, the other three lasted a total of six plays and all ended in touchdowns. And that felt like it set the tone for the day just about as well as anything else.
Yeah, I know it should be noted they were missing two starters in the secondary, and I think that didn't help because two of the touchdowns or two were set up at least by just complete bust in the secondary that there wasn't even, and they were dropping eight. So, I mean, just complete failures. But we'll focus on Bell, but you know, I think that the main thing in that game is the defense shouldn't get a pass because they were just as bad, and special teams wasn't very good either. So, three-phase letdown and kind of sleepwalking through the first half, which has been sort of what this team's MO is, and that's not how you win games, especially in the Big Ten.
I think this persistent issue with not starting well, and, you know, listen, sometimes you don't start well because you're not a very good team. The cat wants out. I'll let him out in a second.
He doesn't want to hear about that game.
And that's really not, you know, I mean, you can't fix that in a bye week, but I do think that you can at least join some of the issues up between struggling on offense and not starting well, insofar as, you know, I think it is difficult. You're right. The defense shouldn't get a pass. They gave up 44 points. They got picked apart completely. I mean, they were, you know, I mean, by the end of the game, they weren't really stopping anything. And I wasn't totally sure why Talia Tagovailoa was still in the game, but that's not really my business. That's Mike Loxley's. It just sort of the thing that I can't escape is just it almost feels like Indiana's getting back into this familiar pattern they've struggled with the last couple of years, which is the defense. It feels like lives on a knife edge because it has to, you know, it almost recognizes right away if we're not perfect today, we may not win the game because the offense isn't moving the ball, the offense isn't getting first downs, the offense isn't even really threatening to score points, and then, you know, that causes the rubber band to break a little bit on defense, and then suddenly you're chasing the game, and then you're making bizarre decisions. Indiana went for it six times on fourth down on Saturday, and I said this in our post-game video with Zion, you know, that you can isolate any one of those, even the fake punt, and just sort of say, like, okay, in a vacuum, maybe you can justify this. But in the macro sense, when you're going for it on fourth down that much, when you're leaving points on the field, when you're sort of going against convention that much, the message that sends is you don't trust your process, whatever that is, whether that's offensively, defensively, you don't trust that just doing the conventional things, the things that make sense, the things that are straightforward sort of decisions will put you in positions to have the opportunity to win games. And I think that's, you know, I mean, that bleeds over into all areas of the ball. And listen, part of that is because you feel like maybe you're coaching against some of your own deficiencies at times if you're Tom Allen. But then that circles back to sort of this question of just like, well, then what is Indiana and where is Indiana going? And how does Indiana build something, a successful formula when it feels like right now Indiana, all the phases of Indiana's team almost feel like they're making each other worse, if you understand what I'm saying.
Well, I think you could. That's evident in the three straight. He didn't even want to hear my point. He got so bored. For non video viewers, he just walked away and let a cat out of the door. That was evident in the three straight three and outs, where two of them they're backed up at their own 10-yard line, and don't go forward. Essentially, they go backward on offense. So the defense put on extra pressure. The special teams didn't work out. I mean, the punts were less than 40 yards too. So, I mean, two of those drives, well, were inside the 35, I think, that Maryland started. So, I mean, you want to talk about short fields, Indiana's 35. And that's just not, I mean, A, nobody's going to have success that way. B, a team that's struggling is definitely not going to have success that way. And, you know, Maryland played right, had quick passing game that didn't allow Indiana to generate any pressure. You know, I can never pronounce his name, was getting rid of the ball really fast, was basically untouched, no sacks. I'm not sure. I didn't look at PFF to see how many even pressures they had in the game. But the only time he missed was when he sort of missed by himself, you know, missed throws. Defensively, it was just, you know, they put the defense in the worst situation possible, and then the defense didn't play well on top of it.
And again, that comes back. We'll move on in a second, just talking about the change Tom Allen made today. But that just comes back again to this idea of just a team that I don't know if the word is trust. I don't know if the word is, chemistry or what. And I'm not suggesting that, like, there's guys fighting in the locker room. Those Hollywood moments where people are like having to be pulled apart and like there's some sort of dramatic conclusion and the whole team comes together. Like, that doesn't happen as often as you think in sports. It's often a lot more unspoken. It's a lot more sort of stuff that people can't verbalize or don't want to, but it just feels like a team that just has a sort of bottomed out level of faith in its own, just like the way it's supposed to win football games. And so you get, how often does it feel like you get guys just kind of, I mean, like one of those touchdowns, I think it was the second one, was that one play drive in the first quarter where, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, it looked like Phillip Dunham just kind of tried to do somebody else's job and left the middle of the field just wide open.
Well, then, you have that, what I thought was emblematic of the defensive failures. If they get them back in 3rd and 10 in the second half, I think this was after the fake punt, or maybe it was the next drive. 3rd and 10 with two nice back-to-back nice pass breakups, and then they allowed the 32-yard run almost off the left, untouched. Same play almost that the Akron ran, to have that huge gain the other time. And somebody, obviously, the same kind of mistakes where the eyes are in the wrong place and somebody's not essentially doing what they're supposed to do.
And it does feel like something had to change, obviously. I don't think
that's... Before we get to that, how many pressures would you think they had in that game?
I mean, it had to be low. It had to be, I would say, less than a half dozen. I mean, how many?
Five. And one of those was on that cornerback blitz.
So yeah, I mean...
Four others, yeah.
And listen, I mean, Maryland has been really good... Tua Tagovailoa got sacked 32 times last season. He's only been sacked 2 times this season. So, like, Maryland is a lot better at that than it was a year ago, to Maryland's credit. But, again, it's just, I mean, all of the stuff that we saw in the first 2-3 weeks of the season that felt like, okay, these are positive signs, these are points of growth, these can be the underpinnings of success moving forward, all that stuff has just evaporated in the last 2 weeks. And I'm not saying all that was Walt Bell's fault. I do, though, understand why Tom Allen might look at that and say, well, I've got to try and change something. I've got to find something that can restore some level of sort of belief and rhythm and efficiency and, just sort of effectiveness, frankly, in this football team. I think he at least knows some of what he's got on defense, but I think he recognizes if he can't find a way to score points, that defense is just not going to be able to operate at a sort of will hold the other team to 10 points or fewer in the first three quarters level in Big Ten play. And so he's made this change today. Walt Bell out, replaced by Rod Carey, who was he's been on staff for the last 2 years as a quality control coach. He's been on defense for quality control, but his whole background is offense. Obviously, many fans will probably remember him as the coach that replaced Darren Hiller. And Hiller was fired midseason last year. I think it was something like 51 weeks ago, basically, that Hiller was fired. That was an interim role as offensive line coach. This is not interim. He's the full offensive coordinator. Contract details haven't been released yet. I think they're still being hammered out. It'll be interesting to just see the kind of like what basically what the terms of his contract are and the length and all those different kinds of things. He has not been an offensive coordinator in more than a decade. He did preside over some very good offenses at Northern Illinois. Obviously, his work at Temple was a lot less superlative. But I think at least you're trying something different with a coach that does have a track record of success. Can it be replicated here, and can it be replicated over the course of the next 8 weeks, one of the first of them being a bye week that at least allows him to sort of dig his teeth into some things? I don't know. But I do think it's probably fair to say Indiana's going to try to do some different stuff. If you look at his background and what his Northern Illinois teams did compared to Walt Bell's background, although, and we'll have this conversation, I suspect, in the next few minutes here, the number of times it seemed remarkable to me that I couldn't recognize a lot of Walt Bell's own background and what he was trying to do on the field. Maybe I'm just not smart enough to see it. I don't know. But one way or another, this change felt like, I don't want to say the only one Allen could have made, but at least probably the cleanest one he could have made, and certainly at the time that he made it. And he had to try and find something.
Well, I think what a lot of people don't understand, and I think part of one of the only reasons this could happen really effectively during effectively, is that they had somebody on staff to actually take over the role. You know, a lot of times, you know, people will say like, well, fire the coordinator and offense. It's hard to do that if you don't have somebody that is available to step in and call plays and sort of be comfortable in that role. And especially if the coach doesn't want that, obviously you have a defensive coach here. So having Rod Carey on the staff makes this move possible and makes it, you can't really bring somebody in at midseason, even at a bye. I mean, that's not really something that you would, function or lead to a lot of change. So he can kind of take over. He's obviously familiar with everybody. Obviously he was coach on the staff last year for part of last year. So that sort of helps in that transition. One thing I want to talk kind of, you were on site in Maryland. I rewatched the press conference. Do you think, I was surprised how definitively Tom Allen sort of blamed the players last night.
I
think it was you asked the question, and then he said, well, basically to me, all I saw was execution without naming Taven Jackson. He said, the quarterback missed a lot of throws, open receivers, and made a lot of bad reads. And I was sort of surprised. And then to have 20, that made me think, well, Bell's safe, right? And then 24 hours later, obviously, he saw more than execution. Are you surprised given what, you've been around this business, quite a while, and I know coaches put up smoke screens and things like that, but just from the way Allen talked last night, I was surprised 24 hours later, this is where we're at.
Yeah, no, I think it is probably fair to say that I felt the same way in terms of coming out of that. I just thought, well, he seems to think that the process worked and that basically it was the people implementing the process that weren't getting the outcome almost. And again, I didn't totally understand that insofar as like the, I don't know, the decisions he made in the game where it's like, well, again, why are you going for it on fourth down this often?
There's for that second drive, you talk about, and this is, we can get into more of it, but the idea that this is a run first team, you go down 7-3, or you go down 7-3, you get a stop, and then three passes and you're out, not trying to put Taven in good situations. And it seemed to be that was sort of like the consistent, they had no fallback identity again. Slow start offensively, you know, that you don't trust Christian Turner, even though he's been sort of your most effective back. Those were things that weren't in Taven's control. And I thought he was in bad situation and bad after bad situation yesterday. And then for, you know, I mean, obviously Alan must have watched the film or talked to people or talked to their coaches, but I was surprised because I didn't, when I came out of that game, I didn't immediately think offensively, you know, man, Jackson just was bad and missed a lot of throws. You know, that was my sort of takeaway from that. I mean, he missed throws, but that wasn't sort of like where the fundamental problem of the offense was.
No, I don't think so either. And I come back to kind of this idea that it's like, well, if you think the structure was working and it was the execution within it that was failing, why are you throwing away points on a field goal? Like, I mean, like, there's nothing wrong with 20 when you've already given up 21 points. There's really not a lot wrong with 21-6 midway through the second quarter. Why are you going for it on 4th and 6? Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I'm talking about with the process. And like, I'm not even suggesting necessarily that Brendan Sorsby doesn't deserve some opportunities, but you stick Brendan Sorsby in there, he gets you 2 touchdowns, but that's largely when Maryland is sort of cycled in its second and third.
They team. Were the starters that, I mean, I don't know if you saw it on the sideline when you're there on the broadcast, most of the starters were dancing on the sideline to the music that they were playing.
And so now do you have some sort of quarterback controversy? Do you have to reopen? Like, it just, I don't know that just, I don't want to start speculating too wildly. It felt like almost sort of, I saw one thing, I heard another, and then I sort of observed another.
Yeah.
I saw a team that just didn't look like it trusted the way it thought it was supposed to win a football game.
Right.
And didn't think it could win the football game that way, and almost immediately deviated from that, whether that was players' performances, whether that was coaching decisions, whatever it was. And then I heard a coach say, actually, I thought the structure was fine, and it was basically the execution within the structure that, to me, derailed everything. And then the next morning, that coach, whatever his sort of post-game process was, watching film, meeting with people, we don't know.
Maybe
Tom Allen will walk us through it. He'll probably never tell us every single inch of what he did. Basically said, made a decision that suggested he didn't think it was all execution, that there was something wrong with the structure, or at very least that he came to a conclusion that the structure was the thing that had to be addressed. Because the execution either wasn't the problem or no longer could be or had moved past, you know, that maybe were things too complicated. I don't know. But like it just I felt like
well,
I,
bizarre
sort of,
thing to me.
I saw one thing. I was told something else. And then by actions, I learned something else.
And there's so many else because to me, they played, you know, throw the Indiana State game out of it. That doesn't count. They played their best offense in that second half against Louisville. And they looked like they had found something, and they never went back to what that offense looked like since the 2 games since and struggled. And I know they're out with Josh Henderson, so they, you know, not using Jalen Lucas the same way. And some, you know, obviously there's things that go into it, but it never felt like, did you feel like Walt Bell was comfortable calling plays for Taven to take advantage of his skill set? Like, it never felt like to me that he figured out how to get in a rhythm with him as a quarterback. You know, they'd throw in the option plays like at the worst possible times. They didn't run them really well. You know, take advantage of his mobility. You know, he can move the pocket, and they really didn't do a lot of that.
I thought Talia Tagovailoa got a lot of throws yesterday that Taven Jackson's good at, that Indiana wouldn't run with him. The back shoulder stuff, the stuff where you basically get, I don't know if you call it like a comeback or a sideline or a button hook. You can run it in a few different kind of ways, and like route names change and everybody's got their own terminology. But basically that one-on-one route you have where you recognize you have single coverage and the cornerback is
all
playing.
All you do is recognize if it's man or zone, and then you go to the next read on the outside. You know,
but you basically just kind of like, you let the receiver get about 6 or 7 yards deep, and then he just angles back toward the sideline, and you just throw the ball, and it's supposed to meet him there. Like, how many times did he hit a throw like that against Louisville, where you just thought that was really good, and that was 8 yards, it was 9 yards, it was 10 yards?
And one thing that Matt Millen pointed out on the broadcast, I don't know if you saw it too, is that, you know, especially in this last game, everything was to sideline to sideline and set up very slow. Like there was no vertical passing game whatsoever. And that was the opposite of what they did against Louisville. What you're talking about, 8 yards out, quick throw, you know, you get it. Here, it was like everything was taking forever. And the halfbacks were, you know, or you know, whoever was out there was, you know, Jalen Lucas just would get was getting crushed just because they you know, they read it out. But even if they hadn't, it was so slow developing that I was like, I don't know how
there
you
was,
execute
there was,
that.
Like it felt like
execute that better. Like
it felt like there was too much stuff that was just like it. The play didn't even really materialize when you would watch, even in real time, like route combinations and things. It felt like it was like 3 seconds in after the snap before you could even sort of see like where guys were supposed to be coming open or, you know, like what. And again, this goes back to, you know, Walt Bell's background's the air raid. He talks about air raid principles. He has since we hired him. I did a whole story in the offseason.
Yeah, it didn't look like about, the offense that you wrote about.
and like, it didn't look like an air raid offense. It's just, you know, like, you know, mesh concepts across the middle where like receivers are literally high-fiving one another. Like they're getting so close to one another to rub their defenders off, they're high-fiving one another. Vertical concepts, nothing. I mean, just so rarely did we see Indiana try anything vertical, anything back shoulder. You know, the stuff that you would go, I mean, if you literally just Google like air raid route concepts, it's stuff you would recognize off of Matt. And that's not a knock on the offense. That's why it works. And that's why it's so popular and actually why it's gotten down to the high school level is because you can teach it to kids when you don't get them for 30 hours a week. You can teach, like you can simplify it as we're going to do a small number of things. We're going to do them really well. And basically it's the job of the quarterback and his receivers pre-snap to recognize which is the right option. And that's all it is. And that's obviously an oversimplification, but at the same time, like I literally had a 30-minute conversation with Hal Mumme about the air raid and how he developed it that boiled down to, we wanted to throw the ball all over the place and we wanted to simplify the game and make it fun because the more you throw it, the more players touch it, the more they gain yards, the more they score touchdowns. And like the whole point is it's all supposed to move. It's supposed to be simple. It's supposed to move fast. You can run out of it. That's not a problem. But like, it just felt like everything, it has felt like everything Indiana has tried to do offensively for most of this season, absent maybe the Ohio State game, because I think they kind of had a game plan specific to that game to shorten it as much as possible, was just overcomplicated. And not just overcomplicated for a redshirt freshman quarterback, whoever it is, but overcomplicated according to like the principles of the offense that Walt Bell himself says is supposed to underpin what he wants to do.
And taking kind of a, you know, I posted about just before we did this kind of a numbers look historically, and it seems like kind of three areas really stood out to me. And you could kind of maybe talk to this why the numbers were same last year, but was it any different? Like, cause so points obviously have been a major issue. The scoring under 20 points essentially a game against FBS opponents since he took over. That's one. This year it got worse. Two, the red zone performance in his tenure was terrible. Basically, about 50% touchdown scorings inside the 25. Last year and this year. So pretty consistent in the fact that it was just not, you know, whenever the few times I did get in the red zone did not have consistent success. And obviously, and the third is the rushing game and, you know, averaged essentially under 100 yards against FBS opponents during his 17 game tenure. That's near the bottom of the FBS and worst, in the, you know, among the worst Power Five teams over a 2 year span. You know, I've seen the last five games, you know, of this. Did this look different last year and they struggled? You know, you said obviously offensive line was a lot of what happened last year. But, you know, I'm just trying to trace where things went wrong for him because essentially, you know, 17 game tenure, the numbers were pretty consistently bad. And so obviously that speaks to some level of talent a little bit. But obviously, you know, things that whole offseason together and things didn't get better this year and upgraded the talent level. So I'm curious, were there any commonalities between this year and last year that you saw and kind of what was different outside?
I mean, I think the one thing, and it's difficult because, like, you know, last year they had no quarterback run element. Last year they had a lot of quarterback injuries. Last year, I do think the offensive line's a lot better this year. Obviously they had a healthier Camper. If he played Saturday, it was very brief, and then he kind of disappeared and never came back. So I'm not sure what happened there. But the one commonality is that I have never really understood what Indiana what was supposed to underpin Indiana's offense. Like what was, you know, every offense is supposed to gain 4 yards on first down and 5 yards on second down and you know, convert easy third downs and run the ball to set up the pass in some function or another. And I could tell you, like, what Indiana tried to do under Mike DeBoer and Kalen DeBoer, and they had varying degrees of success at it, but it was kind of this idea of a robust combination running back wide receiver screen game that spread the field horizontally, made defenses guard boundary to boundary, relied on a power run game in short yardage situations with Stevie Scott, and had some element of quarterback mobility to it, all of which was supposed to set up downfield shots in the same way that Kevin Wilson used to run this wide open spread offense. But it was literally just like, we're going to run the ball downhill and then we're going to set up play action. That's all we're going to do. We're going to do it out of the shotgun or the pistol, but all we're doing is running the ball downhill to set up play action in one-on-one situations to big body receivers over the top of the field. So I could tell you what that was. Nick Sheridan, you know, that was a little bit harder. I think he tried to continue a lot of what Kalen DeBoer did. The COVID season was impossible to evaluate, and the next
year,
that's
an exception. Yeah.
But like I have never really, I never really understood like what Walt Bell, and I tried to say this, and I don't, if people didn't take this in my writing or in our podcast or whatever, I apologize, but I tried to express this, like I never really understood where Indiana was supposed to go to get the offense, the rhythm that would lead to the sort of effectiveness that would you know, gain yards, gain first downs and score points. Like what was to put, you know, and because so often it was like, well, oh, Indiana's going to take a deep shot on first down. And it's like, well, okay. I get the numbers can say that every once in a while, but then they'd run straight into the line.
But you're essentially saying like they didn't have any, so they didn't have a bread and butter to essentially like a rhythm, like you said, like,
and they had, and they
generally
so
they lean on this on first and second. Yeah. And
three different offensive line coaches, you know, they obviously added a number of players either through the portal or they brought them up through the program or, you know, through development, like Donovan McCulley or James Bamba or Jalen Lucas or Omar Cooper or whomever. And again, like part of what always kind of befuddled me, and I never really found a way to like ask this to Walt Bell that like got a meaningful answer out of him. But part of what never made sense to me was I kept sort of waiting to see something that looked like the air raid.
Yeah.
And, or at least my understanding of what the air raid is, and certainly my understanding of the way Walt Bell described the air raid and the, you know, the offenses that he'd come up with, Blake Anderson and Larry Fedora and, you know, the people that he kind of studied under and followed through his career. And I just never saw it. Like I never saw anything that looked like that. And again, I mean, you know, maybe it's all just personnel. And it seems unlikely to me. Part of the point of the air raid is that you're supposed to be able to do it with maybe slightly less talented personnel. That was the entire point of why it was first sort of seeded at Kentucky and Texas Tech and Washington State.
Well, like you said, this year the offensive line has not been like all American level, but I mean it's been enough to, I think, I mean you could almost beat Louisville. You held Ohio State close. I mean those are feathers in the cap for an offensive line that didn't play like that last year. So I mean I don't think you can say it's all personnel because it really hasn't been, you know, especially through the first, you know, 4 weeks, you know, glaring personnel issues that this team had on offense.
Yeah, I mean. It's just, I don't know. It has never, I never understood what Indiana was supposed to be offensively under Walt Bell. Not in the way he described it. He talked to you about it, but in a way that whether Connor Bazelak or Jack Tuttle or Dexter Williams or Taven Jackson or Brendan Sorsby was the quarterback, you know, whether Darren Hiller or Rod Carey or Bob Bostad was his offensive line coach. You know, whether his starting running back was a juke, East, you know, East-West player, a big bruiser, you know, a shifty inside runner, an explosive outside runner. I mean, like, why did we stop seeing Jalen Lucas in the pass game? And listen, if Walt Bell were here, he'd say, well, here's why, and here's why, and here's why. I understand that, but, like, it just sort of felt like over and over again, you went into games just not really knowing, like, okay, this is what it looks like when Indiana's playing well offensively. Not because they weren't moving the ball and scoring points. Please understand, you know, I get people can just say, well, duh, you know, they were down 27-3 on Saturday. I understand that. I understand anyone who says that. But what I mean is I could sit there and I could say they're in the rhythm. They're getting what they want. The, you know, the guys that they want to get touches are getting touches, and they're getting touches where they want
them. Like that, I mean, like essentially you're describing the second half against Louisville or Indiana State, but Indiana State's, you know, a lower team. So I think you're essentially describing what they did there. They spread the ball around. I mean, Jackson hit 9 different targets. He got some runs. I mean, you essentially, that's what I think an offense is supposed to look like. And outside of those, you know, because obviously the red zone, you know, issues were there too, but there was about, you know, 24 minute period where they looked like a real offense, and they haven't looked like that since. Spinning this forward, you mentioned the quarterback controversy or potential for one. I think that's a big deal. I don't know why they opened that door, especially since it took 9 months to shut it. And you're going to flip your decision within 3 weeks. Do you think, so Big Ten Media Days next week, I'll be there. You'll be in the room. Do you think Tom Allen takes a mulligan and says, we made a mistake there? Or do you think he says, well, we got to evaluate everyone, which is, I mean, yeah, but you evaluated these guys for 9 months. Like, Taven deserved a little more, I think, you know, because he could have said after the game, like, look, I didn't want Taven to get injured, and it was a good opportunity to get Brandon Sorsby some saps, and then stopped it right there. But he did not do that. He did the opposite of that.
No, said, he
had the chance, and he did not.
I think the mulligan he may get, you know, if he wants it, is that he's changed offensive coordinators. And so
throw it to Rod to make the statement.
Well, no, I don't know. I don't know that so much as, you know, sort of say like we're, you know, we push the reset. I do think he kind of needs to come out and say someone's my starter and just say Merrill was a bad day. I reviewed the film. I realized a change had to be made. Just kind of keep hammering, like, it's, you know, just sort of try to misdirect around it, basically, the way coaches sometimes
because,
do.
Like, because, and I was, the story I wrote was supposed to go up today. I'm glad it didn't, because I got to edit it based on the changes they made. But essentially, you know, I wrote about Tom Allen's comments 2 weeks ago, might not have even been full 2 weeks ago, where he's like, look, we need to name Taven the starter because someone needed to take leadership of this team. And he went on about how, you know, he's now going to get a chance to make it his own. Like, it just felt like he just slammed the door on the opportunity for you to sort of rally around one guy and have his vote. Like, cause like, what are players supposed to believe now that you've named a quarterback and you gave him 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks essentially to be the guy? And then on a bad day when nobody played very well, you benched him. And I didn't think, you know, I thought there was some good things with him and that they had a guy that they could build around. Not to say that Sorsby's not. I just think that that was – has the potential to be a long-term calamity when that could have been avoided.
I think if nothing else, you know, especially with the bye, you need to get there with Rod Carey. And you just – you need to be in a place where you just say, whoever it is –
like you can't go again. Like, you can't do this.
I'm just, I'm so tired of talking about who it should be. Like, I'm done with that. But like,
well, that's what I'm saying. It was a 9 month.
You need to get there early with Rod Carey in terms of just saying,
have you ever had a competition that lasted that long to go 2 weeks into the season, essentially, after it started in January, equal reps, essentially, the whole way through?
I mean, the only time, the only sort of comparable thing in Tom Allen's tenure would have been when he inherited Richard Lego, who was a very much like a pocket passer, big, tall, strong, not super mobile. And he basically wanted to pivot to Peyton Ramsey, but Ramsey was a redshirt freshman. And he kind of had to wait for a moment when he could justify pulling Lego for Ramsey. But once he went to Ramsey, even though Ramsey struggled through parts of that season before he got injured,
he stuck with him.
And then he went back to Lego when Ramsey basically couldn't, you know, raise a football above his head anymore because he was so beat up. I just think, like, what I would say is, I guess I don't quite know what Tom Allen's going to do because it's hard for me to kind of know where his head is right now. And this isn't a criticism so much as it is, he has just seemed less decisive until the decision he made Sunday, the fake punt in your own territory and the quarterback change and, you know, sort of these, you know, differing assessments that are kind of hard to square up next to each other. You know, he needs almost to kind of find his own decisiveness again, or whatever you want to say.
Well, because and the reason,
but he's got to get there with. I think he's got to get there with Rod Carey early. Yeah, and he's just there's got to be an answer that is just this is our guy, because whoever it is a redshirt freshman. We said all the time, fans need to remember to let him make some mistakes. Maybe a coach needs to remember that too.
Oh yeah,
that's this is our guy, and he's going to play, and that's not going to, you know, like we're going to let him play through some mistakes. But we're not going to just this isn't going to be a revolving door.
You ride the wave because you didn't play. He wasn't the reason they lost the game. Even and it might not have been the top three, you know. No. So it's like that's why it was so stunning to me.
Unless Dexter Williams is ready.
Yeah, that's an exception.
That's kind of the one curveball in all this that we're not going to get. Like, I don't think we get any kind of notice on that until Dexter Williams walks out.
Is not on that injury report. But the reason I bring it up is because I've covered some teams where coaches in Auburn and Virginia Tech have literally destroyed the confidence of their quarterback and ruined them for good because they've coached them in a way that wasn't conducive and kind of played around with them and broke their confidence. And I think Taven's got a good head on his shoulders, and I'm not saying this would happen, but I do think these things can have a longer impact. You know, cause to me with Taven, you weren't trying to win one game. You were trying to build a stable future. So at the end of the season, even if you finish 4-8 or 5-7, you could say, look, I've got the quarterback. I'm going to build around. We like this kid. He's shown glimpses, and this is where we're going. To now go back and forth and have to finish the year with no quarterback again and to do this again, especially, like I said, I can't 9 months and they split reps like basically throughout and they waited 2 weeks into the season. It's just an astounding sort of kind of coaching failure. And obviously, well, Bell's gone, so maybe he's just going to throw it all at him. But it just is mind-boggling to me that opened that door, especially when there was no reason for it to even begin.
It'll be interesting. I think we'll get to talk to Rod Carey at some point this week. I don't know how many answers he'll have, frankly. And it's important to remember that, you know, the same thing he said last year, he can't work miracles. Nobody's going to work miracles in that short of a space of time, but maybe he can find some things that put Indiana in some slightly better positions, or just kind of give Indiana at least some fundamental building blocks that it just seemed like they couldn't find, they couldn't hang on to, they couldn't build on this last basically season and a half. But we'll leave it there for tonight. He's Mike Nisler. I'm Zach Osborne for the Herald Times, for the Indy Star. Thank you so much for listening to Mind Your Banners. We will be back midweek, probably to talk to Mike about what he sees, hears, and experiences at Basketball Media Day, and maybe we'll have a little more football thrown in. But until then, take it easy. We'll talk to you soon.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.